We're holding at the top of Psakhet Gimel Amud Aleph. I'm still talking about the dinim that we started learning yesterday, that if blood of a chatas splashes on clothing, then that clothing has to be washed in the Azara. So we were dealing with various details of that. The reason behind it, by the way, the Ramban points out on the pasuk that since the blood is supposed to stay inside the Azara, as we've learned before, if it's taken out, it becomes fossil. So it's only right then that, if it gets on clothing, then also you should keep it in the Azara and wash it there. Actually, later on we'll learn in the parak that even if it was taken out, you have to bring it back in and wash it. But the basic idea should be that since it was supposed to be in the Azara, then it should remain in the Azara as much as possible. So the Gemara says, Boi minu Rami Bachoma Merav Chista. So Rami Bachoma asked Rav Chista, Nitas Abdeged Tomei Mavu. What would happen if the blood splashes on a piece of clothing which is Tomei? The point of the question is, does the blood become possible? And as we've learned in the Mishnah, if the blood is possible, then it doesn't need to be washed in the Azara. And it's not just washed in the Azara. We're going to learn as we go through the Perek that there are certain special dinim of how it has to be done, etc. So will that not apply because it's tummy? Or will we say that when it first fell on it, it was still kosher? So then it only, so the psul and the requirement to wash it came at the same moment. And therefore it should require washing in the Azara as well. Maybe we would say then that if it became possible before it landed on the clothing is one thing, but here where it became possible the moment that it landed on the clothing, then maybe it shouldn't require. There's an interesting point. Achronim talk about the Chalkas Yoyev talks about in a sefer called Tava de Kushiyasa, where he has Kava 103 Kuf Beis Aleph questions on things in Shas, famous Lomdash sefer. And he points out later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about you have a case where blood of an Ola, now only a Chatas has to be washed in the Azara, an Ola not, and you have a case where blood of an Ola falls onto a piece of clothing and then Chatas falls in the same place. So do we say, and Robert says over there, that it doesn't because only the blood gets absorbed. So then the Chalkas Yoyev points out that in that case, then Rami Bachoma is saying, well, it becomes possible at the same moment that it touches the thing, maybe it doesn't need to be cleaned. And that means, in other words, but if it weren't Tomei, there wouldn't be a question. Of course, you'd need to clean it because the chiyuv of washing it in the Azara is the moment it touches it. Whereas according to Rava, it's not a matter of it touches it; it's only a matter of it gets absorbed. So Achronim talk about that maybe in fact Rabbi Bachoma and Rava do in fact argue. And they talk about different possibilities of how to reconcile that. Maybe Rava's din is not relevant over here because the blood of the Oila is basically in effect it's preventing the blood of the Chatas from being absorbed in the first place, as opposed to here. There's nothing to prevent it from being absorbed. Anyway, Omar of Huna Breda Rishua. Midukum of Boy Life Off. He said, Huna Breda Rishua points out, let's examine the premise of Rami Bahama's question. Given that he asks the question, Shmamina, that shows that evidently he holds Hoysala Shasa Kosher Venifsala, like our Mishnah and like Reb Shimon, whose opinion we discussed yesterday, that even if Hoysala Shasa Kosher Benifsala, even if that blood did have a point where it was kosher to sprinkle, but only then it became possible in Gamaton Kibbutz, then the blood will not require this din of Kibbutz. But you could say, and then the question would be, Hanimili Bazaar Hazed. And the question would be, where first it became possible, and then afterwards it got on the clothing. Avon Lasachas Loi. But if it happened both at the same time, then not. Or maybe there's no difference. So Rav Huna Breda Rishua was explaining, evidently that's Rami Bahama's premise of his question, is to figure like that. Because if you say that when it had Shasa Kosher, And then afterwards it became Tomei, then you still have to wash it out of the clothing in the Azara, then there'd be no room for the question in the first place because then it was kosher before it ever landed on the clothing. It only became Tomei once it touched it. So there's his answer. Amalei, so Rav Chista answers to Rami Bachama, Plugta de Rabba Wazer, Rabbanan Aliba de Rabba, Vechidukamataras Abayan. The answer to your question will be that it will depend on Machlokas, Rabba Wazer, and the Chachamim, following Rabba's way of understanding the Machlokas, as Abaye explains it. As now the Gemara is going to quote, the Machlokas, Tanoim, Rabba Wazer, and and the Chachamim about it. And then a discussion of Amudorium from which it will emerge that this point about whether it became Tomei and became Possel at the same whether it became Tomei and Possel therefore at the same time as something else, whether that means that now it doesn't have to be washed, is going to depend on a Machlokas Tanoim of the way that Amudorium explained it. Namely as follows, the Tanya Rabbi Elazar Omer. Let's start with, we have a Braisa. Rabbi Elazar says, Mei Chatas Shenitmu, water of Paradromal water that became Tomei, Mitaharin, nevertheless, even though that water itself is Tomei, will be Mitahar somebody or something that is Tomei Mess. And we can prove it, says Rabbi Elazar, Shire Nida, Mazin Aleha, because we can see, for example, a woman who's Nida, suppose that she's Tomei from Nida, but she's also Tomei Mess. The fact is, we're allowed to sprinkle Paradromal water on her. It's going to become Tomei when it's about to land on her, as we're going to see, when it lands on her, because when it touches her, it becomes Tomei. And yet we see, and we find, Rashi points out, we never find that a Nida has to Toivel before she gets Hazar, before she gets sprinkled with Pot Adrum water. So you see, it doesn't matter that it became Tomei, as the Gemara is now going to go on to explain that actually it would actually become Tomei a moment before it touches her even, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. And yet it's not a problem. So we see, therefore, that even though it's Tomei, it's still Matahar. Tosfos points out, actually, that there is a Gemara that meant there are Gemaras in Chagiga and in Yevamos that talk about that at one point the Chachamim had to make a Gzera not to bring Paradromal water across a river on a boat, because one time they did that and it turned out there was a piece of a mess stuck in the boat and everything became Tomei. Now, if we're saying over here that the water can be Tomei and you can still sprinkle it, what's the problem? So Tosfos gives an answer that the difference is that there it's talking about before you put the ashes, and here it's talking about after. Tosfos, in that Gemara and Chagiga, and also Shittim Kubetzos over here, brings a different answer, that the answer is it's different when there's too much mess. The whole point is, Parah Drumah water is supposed to be Matahar from too much mess, so therefore it can't be that it itself would have too much mess on it. But when you have other kinds of tumas, such as we're talking about over here, the tumor of a nida, that's not a problem. That doesn't block the paradrum water from being effective. A couple of interesting things in that regard. First of all, the Rosh learns from here the same thing. For example, when you have a keli that you bought from a goy, whereas we know you have to tovel it, suppose that he also previously had used it and it needs to be kashered as well. So the din is you're supposed to kasher it and then you tovel. What happens if you did it out of order? So the Rosh argues, based on this Gemara, it should be fine. The same way as we're saying over here that Parah Adrumah water can be Matahar and Nidja, even though she's still Tomei with Tumas Nidja, the same way should be as far as Toveling a Keli from the Tumah of a Goy, that it should work even if the Keli otherwise still needs to be kashered. A number of other Rishonim and Achronim argue with that and say that it's not really the same thing. For one thing, that Toveling a Keli from a Goy is not really a matter of Tumah Vatara. It's a different matter, and therefore there's really no proof. The Sicha also, the Rebbe talks about an idea somewhat related to this. You have at the end of Yuma, where Rabbi Akiva says, Ashreichem Yisrael, how fortunate are you Jewish people, that Hashem himself is matar you, and the expression is, Ma mikra mataris atzmeim, afa chodesh bochum mataris Yisrael. So the question is, well, yeah, mataris atzmeim, who else is going to be toveling in a mikveh? And the answer is, you can have a person who's Tomei with multiple tumas. Let's say nowadays, we are all Tomei mess. Nevertheless, they still have the concept of a mikveh, because at least it's metahar us from one kind of tumah. In the same way, Rabbi Akiva is saying, even a yid has many different tumas, many different averas, at least he's doing tshuva on one of them, then the Eved Shter is prepared to forgive him and to clean up that one kind of tumah, even though there may be others. Anyway, so that's the first part. So we see that Rabbi Elazar holds that you're allowed to, that the Paradromal water can be Tomei, as we see that it's possible to sprinkle Paradromal water on a Nida, and that doesn't create a problem. Now, Ba'omer Rabba, so now, Rabba says, Mazin Aleha, and then she talks about this, adds the words of Tahoira, and she becomes Tahar from Tumas Mes, even though she's still Tomei from Tumas Nida, and even though the Paradromal water becomes Tomei when it touches her. V'omer Rabba. Now Rabba further explains in this connection, it's not just when it touches her. Rabbi Lozer b'shita Rabbi Akiva Rabbi Omra. Actually, Rabbi Lozer, what he's saying over here is following the shita of his opinion of his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. This is Rabbi Lozer, plain Rabbi Lozer in Shas. Plain, when we have a Tana, Rabbi Lozer in Shas, without specifying it's Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua. He was one of the Asar Arugimalchus, but he was one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, De Omar, where Rabbi Akiva says, Havoras Kliya, Galim Rokim Tomei, Kemunach Domi. When you pass over a Peli above something which is Tomei, then that's considered like it's placed over there, and therefore it becomes Tomei. Namely, the Tanan. We learn in a Mishnah in Masech Tepara, Hoya Oymed Chutz Tatanu. Suppose a person is standing outside of an oven, or next to an oven. Now, the ovens in those times were, as we know throughout Shas, were made out of earthenware, and the opening was at the top. So now, the Sheretz Tatanu, now there's a Sheretz in the, oven. And therefore the oven is tamei. Now, suppose the person, so when we say that he's chutz latanur, what we mean is, in other words, you have a window, then next to the window you have an oven, and next to the oven this person is standing. So now he needs to reach over the oven to get to the window. He sticks his hand out towards the window, the notel was a login, and he takes a bottle of poradruma water, vehaviri al pitanu, and now he brings it back to himself, carrying it over the oven. The actual Mishnah in Pora doesn't actually have the words v'sheretz batanu, because even if the oven does not have a sheretz in it, we have a general rule that most things are tomei relative to poradruma, so therefore we'd still have a question about that. Some reforshim deal with questions about, is it in fact that we have to necessarily be talking about the sheretz as the tumah d'oraisa, or is it good enough that the oven is considered tomei d'rabbanan? In any case, the point is that now he takes the bottle, and now when he's bringing it back towards where he's standing, he's passing it over the oven. Rabbi Akiva says that the bottle and the paradrum of water will become tamei v'chum matarin, and the chum say that it will remain tahor because we don't care that it went over the airspace of the oven. If he put it down on the oven, then everybody would agree it's possible. But here, where he just passed it over it, then it's not a problem. Over Hopsley, the Machlokas namely is as follows. The Rabbi Akiva Sava Kemunach Dami, the Rabbanan Savri Lav Kemunach Dami. Rabbi Akiva holds that carrying the bottle over the oven is the equivalent of placing it down on the oven. So Mephoshim talk about that this can be connected with the point you have in connection with Hilchos Shabbos, Chlutuk Mishahuncha Dami. When you throw something, let's say through Rosh Hashanah, is it considered as though it landed in Rosh Hashanah and then the person would be chayev for carrying on Shabbos? But on the other hand, maybe it's not the same thing over here, because the fact is he's carrying it, and therefore it's not really the same thing. So Rashi explains over here it's a matter of Maila also b'chatas. In general, we know the Chacham were very machmer with the dinim of chatas, with the dinim of parah adumah, precisely because, as we've learned at various times, of tvul yoyim, of Korean is a tvul yoyim, can prepare the parah adumah. And the tzedukim disagreed with that, so the chum would have to have a tzvul yoyim do it. But then, and because of that, because we don't want people then to think that we can otherwise be careless with the tada, the parah adruma, the chum made many many rules about the parah adruma to remove any trace of truma, even where it wouldn't actually be metame. So this would be an example. Rabbi Akiva would say that passing it over the oven is enough that it's considered as though it's not the makom tahor, that's not in a tahor place, and therefore it's going to be tamei. The chum disagree. Because again, the machlokas is that Rabbi Akiva saw a kemunach dami. Rabbi Akiva holds that bottle was considered like it was actually placed on the oven, and therefore it became tamei. But Rabbanan Sabri, lav kemunach dami, the chum will hold that not. So Rabbi Lozer, when we just said about sprinkling paradrum of water on a nida, is going to be following that logic. So now, even though by the nida, even though it doesn't even land on her yet, and already it's tamei, because while it's still above her, when it's about to land, for a fraction of a second before it lands on her, it's already above her, and it becomes tamei at that point. And nevertheless, it can be sprinkled on her, and it's effective, and it makes her tahor from tumas nes. So you see that sort of thing works. Well, then, in that case, we can say, so far, that Romy Balchama's question about the blood landing on the clothing is going to be subject to a machloikas, Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. Did we say that that blood became tamei before it landed on the clothing, and therefore you don't need to wash it in the azara, or do we not? Do we say that it only became tamei at the moment it touched the clothing, and then in that case, then the truma and the coming on the clothing happen at the same time, and in that case, you would have to wash it in the azara. However, we're not done yet, because the Eis v'Abaya, because Abaya pointed out a contradiction to Rava. Abraisa says, "Moedir Rav Akiva, b'hazah she'avira al-gabi kli cheres tomei, or al-gabi mishka v'moshev tomei," Rav Akiva will agree, even though Rav Akiva is saying that when you carry the bottle over an oven which is tomei, then the bottle and the contents of it become tomei, and therefore the part of adrumal water is possible. But Rav Akiva will agree, if you're sprinkling part of adrumal water, and it passes over, al gabi kli cheres tomei, it passes over a kli cheres, that is tomei, or al gabi mishka v'moshev tomei, or it passes over a bed or a seat, which is tomei from a zav or whatever, shehi tahora, nevertheless, those drops of water will remain tahor, she'en l'chadav, she'metame l'mayla kilamata, because there's nothing that will be metame above, meaning in the air space above it, like down when you're touching it, ela kazayis min a mess, or shal kol ama ahilin. The only thing will be a kazayis of a mess, and all other things that are metame ba'oil. So, yes, in other words, if you have a kazayis of a mess, and inside a house, then yes, the tumor will spread above it, and even when you're in the airspace above it, or even in the airspace under the same roof where it's located, then you and anything in there will become tummy. But other things, Rabbi Akiva points out, let's say, for example, the mishka v'moshav, or let's say the kli cheres, which is tummy, even if it's tummy mess, it itself is only a rish in the tumor, so therefore it's metame if you touch it, but not if you have something in the airspace over it. And the Gemara interjects, what does he mean? Sha'al kol ha'ma'ahil and other things that are matame b'oil, li'isuya evan ha'manugas. That he comes to include with that a stone from a house that had saras, where the stone has to be taken out and replaced, and if necessary, and in some cases the whole house has to be demolished, where then that such stones are also matame b'oil. So in those cases, then you have tumas oil, but Rabbi Akiva is saying, not in other cases. So what do you mean? Why would so even Rabbi Akiva was so here we have Rabbi Elazar. So here we have what are we saying? Rabbi Elazar is saying that it's fine to sprinkle pot adrumal water on a nida, and therefore that proves that pot adrumal water can be tomei, and nevertheless you can sprinkle it, and that presupposes that he's holding like Rabbi Akiva that even before it lands on the nida, even while it's still in the airspace above her, it's already tomei, and yet you can sprinkle it. But we see Rabbi Akiva holds that concept only when it comes to tumas, where in fact the tumor will spread upward and not to a nida where it doesn't do that. So you can't explain Rabbi Akiva's opinion that way. In fact, also, I mean, we said before that we said before Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva are following the same shita. So what's the problem? Even if it becomes tamei from going over the oven, or even if Rabbi Akiva is saying it doesn't become tamei from going over the kli cheres or whatever, who cares? Even if it did, Rabbi Elazar would still say you could sprinkle it. So the Chazon Ish gives an answer that after all, Rabbi Elazar agrees that d'rabbanan you're not supposed to sprinkle par adrumah water when it's tamei. This is what we said, that it would work when it's tamei is on a d'raisa level, but d'rabbanan you shouldn't do it. And here we're talking about tumah d'rabbanan. So the point is, therefore, Abaye says so you can't understand Rabbi Elazar's statement that way, because even Rabbi Akiva is not going to hold that the airspace above a nida makes the water tamei before it touches her. Ela, I'm going to buy it to Kula Alma Lav Kamunach Dami. Rather, Abaye says, no, everybody is going to agree, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, that the water is not considered like it's landed on the thing that it's above. So the only reason in the case of the bottle carried over the oven, why is Rabbi Akiva going to say that it's tamei, is only because of a gzeira. Rabbi Akiva sabar, gazrinin, shami yenuach, Rabbi Akiva is concerned that he might actually put the bottle down he might actually put it in the air space of the oven. He was talking about it's above the oven, but after all, the inside space of the oven is tamei because of the shed that's inside it. Suppose that he lowers the bottle a couple of inches, and now it's inside the air space of the oven. It'll definitely be tamei. So Rabbi Akiva is concerned that even if he only passes it above the oven, nevertheless, he's still going to be concerned about that he might do that, and therefore he's going to make a gzeira and say that it'll be tamei. But Rabbanan Sabi legazrin, and the Chum say you don't have to make such a gzeira. Umoyde Rabbi Akiva b'hazah. So why does Rabbi Akiva agree when it comes to part of Adrum of water that was already sprinkled? Is because Kiva did nafak, because once it already left his hand, it left his hand. He has no control over it now to make it land on the tumah, and therefore Rabbi Akiva says there's no reason to make a gzeira at that point. We always say, you know, once you throw something out of your hand, then it's out of your control. Only the Eidishter, we say on him that his arrows are still in his hand. They have a Loshon HaPosik from Hazinu, the Seich is the Mishpat Yodi, that Rashi explains over there, that Vos of Adam shoots an arrow and has no control after he shoots it. Where it goes, that the Eved just shoots the arrow and still has it in his control. So therefore over here, the same sprinkling part out of the water is the equivalent of shooting an arrow. Once it's out of his hand, it's out of his hand. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva has no need to make a Zeta for that case. The point is, therefore, in that case, then, what is the underlying machloikas of Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim? Why, indeed, does Rabbi Elazar say that Mei Chakas, that the king Tomei, can be Metaher, and the Chachamim evidently disagree with him? That's the machloikas, which now is going to be relevant back to Rami Bachama's question about do we compare and derive a case of a tumor that was there before from a tumor that happened at the same time. Mar Sabadonin, Rabbi Elazar says, we could learn that. Therefore, so what happens? So forget about this idea, says Abaya. Forget about the idea of Rabba that the water will become tummy before it lands on the nida because it's in her airspace. Even Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold that. But it will definitely become tummy the moment it touches her. But and Rabbi Elazar is saying, and even the Chacham agree that that's fine. Well, Rabbi Elazar learns from that. Since we see that it works even when it became tamei, when it touched her, then the same thing. We can say that it will become that it will work. And mimatahu, even if it became tamei before it touched her. Mar Saba ain't done, and where's the Chum hold? That's not like that. It's one thing, the moment it touches her, it becomes Tomei, fine, at least at that same moment it's also being Matahar her. But to say that it became Tomei earlier, and now say, nevertheless, you can sprinkle it, that the Chum would say, no, that's not the same thing. Well, then now we have the answer. So now, says Rav Chisda, we have the answer to Rami Bahama's question. And by the way, Rashi points out the reason why we said before, as Rabba explained it, and as Abaya answered, as Abaya explained it, we had the expression, the Gemara had used the expression before, alibad Rabba b'chidukamataris Abaya, according to Rabba, as Abaya had explained it. So Rashi says, because Abaya is Rabba's Talmud. He's not coming to argue with Rabba. He's coming to clarify the matter. Therefore, we're still attributing the din that we were saying to Rabba, because Rabba was the one who pointed out this concept. And Abaya is just clarifying and explaining what that is saying, that you're understanding the machlokas of Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim a certain way. We should really rather explain it this way. But he's still using the same premise as Rabba, and therefore Rav Chisda can attribute the basic thing to Rabba. In any case, the point is that now we have the answer, therefore. So according to, so now with Rami Bahama's question. So again, the blood got on the clothing, but the clothing was tamei, so the blood became tamei at the same moment to touch the clothing. So it will come out then that according to Rabbi Elazar then, according to Rabbi Elazar, it's the same thing when it became tamei now as when it became tamei earlier. And we know when it became tamei earlier, then it's already posel. And as our Mishnah had said, you don't have to wash it in the Azara. Well, the same thing when it became tamei, the moment to touch the clothing would be the same thing and you don't need to do it. Whereas according to the Chachamim, we don't do that. And according to the Chachamim, we would in fact say that you do in fact have to wash it in the Azara. So that's one way of learning the machlokas, and so it comes out, so the Gemara is going to now bring a different way of learning the machlokas, but in any case, it comes out according to that's not going to be relevant directly to the question of, to the question, The Rami Bahama's question is going to be a side thing just to explain the opinions of Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. It comes out then from this Gemara, it comes out that according to the Chachamim, you should in fact have to wash it in the Azara. And in the end then, when the Rambam brings the Salocha, he actually says that you do not need to. And the Nosa Kalim and the Rambam wonder why, according to what we said, it comes out that according to the Chachamim, and the Halacha is like a Chachamim against Rabbi Elazar, you should need to wash it in the Azara, it comes out. So how is that? And in fact, the Ma'ari Kurker says that it must be that Rambam had a different Girsa, or that there was a mistake in the text of the Rambam, but then the Merkavah Mishnah points out that since we said before, we were talking about before, Rava's statement later on in our Perek about the case where blood of an Oila landed on clothing, and then blood of a Chatas, and Rava says in that case you don't have to wash it, so it comes out according to Rava. It's not a matter of when it touches it, it's a matter of when it gets absorbed, and by the time it gets absorbed it's definitely Tomei, and therefore the Rambam can paskin accordingly and say that even though all Gemara seems to conclude otherwise, that the Rambam can paskin accordingly, that therefore you don't in fact have to wash it in the Azara. And then again, you have other discussions, Chazon Ish and other Achronim talk about to end for the Rambam. The fact is, the Gemara doesn't bring that point of Rava's about the blood of the Oila in our Sugya, and therefore it doesn't seem to be relevant. But there's other considerations over here also. So the Gemara says, Rava says, you know what, as far as the machlokas of Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim, I'll give you a different explanation. Rava Amar, to Kula Alma ain't done in. Everybody's going to agree that, yeah, there's a big difference between whether it was Tomei before or whether it became Tomei the moment it touched the Nida. Sure, even Rabbi Elazar is not going to say just because it works when it touches her and becomes Tomei, that therefore it should work for Parah Adam or water before it ever touched her. If it became Tomei before it ever touched her. No, the machlokas is not on that. Rather the machlokas would be as follows. The Rabbi Elazar Saba Hazot Tzricha Shiur. Rabbi Elazar holds that there needs to be a minimum amount of Parah Adumah water that lands on the person who is tummy. But he also holds that the sprinklings can combine together. He would hold that if you did less than that amount, the actual amount would be enough to be able to dip the ends of the Ezev into. So if less than that landed on the Tomei person or object, Rabbi Elazar would hold it's not Matahar. However, he holds that even if you did less than that the first time, you can sprinkle again and then it combines. So he sprinkled, let's suppose that the minimum amount of Parah Adumah water that has to land on the person to be Matahar, then let's say, we're going to say is 5 milliliters, let's say. So now, what happens? He sprinkled 4 milliliters, no good, it's not Matahar yet. However, then he sprinkles 1 more milliliter, and now we're good. We have 5, Rabbi Elazar holds that can combine together. Well, the first 4 already became Tomei when they touched her. And nevertheless, it's still Mitzadif, it still combines together with the 5th one that now lands on her, and is Matahar her from Tumas Mess. So we see, clearly, says Rava, if we look at it that way, that Rabbi Elazar holds that even though it was Tomei before it ever did its job as part of Adumah water, nevertheless that works. But Amar and Sabi, the Chum are going to hold Hazar and Tzricha Shiur. No, to begin with, you don't need a minimum shiur. You don't need that 5 milliliters. 1 milliliter lands on her. 1 drop lands on her is good enough, and therefore there's no such thing that you can talk about that it became Tomei before it landed on her. It only becomes Tomei when it landed on her, and that the Chum agree we have no problem with. So that's another way of understanding their machlokas. So in that case, then it would come out that their machlokas is not directly relevant to the matter of the blood on the clothing and the washing it in the azara, but it's another way of explaining their machlokas. Next, we said in the Mishnah, so the bottom line is then, again, so Rami Bahama's question about where the blood splashed on Tomei clothing, so Rav Chista is explaining that it'll actually be subject to a machlokas Rabbi Elazar, and the Chachamim according to Rabbi Elazar, it won't need to be washed in the Azara, and according to the Chachamim, it will, and again, the Rambam paskins, it does not, and the Nosa Kalim deal with why the Rambam says that. We said in the Mishnah, Chatas Psula Chula, we said if the Chatas is Posul, then the blood doesn't need to be washed in the Azara, and the Mishnah had said it doesn't matter whether it had Shas HaKosher or not, it doesn't matter whether there was a period of time when that blood was able to be sprinkled or not. Nevertheless, since now it's possible and it can't be sprinkled on the Mizbeach, then therefore we don't have to wash it in the Azara. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, that there are in fact different opinions about that. The Pasuk says, Vashe Yiza Midama ala Beged, if of its blood squirts on clothing. Now, Midama is a meal. So Midama means Midam Ksheira v'lo Midam Ksula. So therefore we learn from the Mem, that it means, or from the fact that it says midama from its blood, that it means only from the blood of a chatas that is kosher, not from one that is posel. Rabbi Akiva says it's not necessarily always when it's posel. Posel shatas kosher v'nifsala. If the chatas had a time when it was kosher, when the blood was kosher to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, v'nifsala, and only then it became posel. Dama ton kibos, the blood is still going to require kibos. Aye, that blood is posel now to go on the mizbeach. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, it had shasa kosher, and therefore Rabbi Akiva says you still have to wash it in the Azara. Loi hoisel, a shasa kosher v'nifshala, if it never had a shasa kosher, the examples we gave in the Mishnah, let's say, for example, if it was shechted with a thought of chutz l'zmanu, or chutz l'mekoma, or if a posel did the Kabbalah, etc., then Rabbi Akiva agrees that it doesn't need kibbutz. Reb Shimon says no, either way the blood does not require kibbutz in the Azara, so Rabbi Akiva is arguing with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, which of course he can do, being a Tana. Reb Shimon is the Tana of our Mishnah, and he says that it doesn't matter either way, because now the blood is possible, it doesn't matter whether it ever had shasa kosher, and therefore it doesn't need kibbutz. So there's a number of other cases actually where we find a similar machloikas. Later on in the Perek, when we talk about Mariko Shkipa, when we talk about the special din of scouring out and cleansing a pot in which a korban was cooked, does it also matter over there whether the korban had a shasa kosher or not? And you have a similar machloikas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon, whether in the case the korban was posel, whether it requires mirik or shkifa, and according to Rabbi Shimon, it doesn't matter when it became posel, you always need, and according to Rabbi Akiva, not necessarily. And there's several other examples like that. So the Gemara says, my time at Rabbi Shimon, why does Rabbi Shimon say it doesn't matter whether it had shasa kosher or not? Because it says, ksiv, oisa, because the pasuk continues after it talks about this din of the blood on the clothing. The pasuk continues. Kol zocha b'koyinim yoichal oisa. Every male koyin shall eat it, the chatas. Well, oisa is a meal, so therefore that's a meal. Ochti midama, and then you have also the word midama that we were just discussing, meaning from its blood, not the blood of something else. Therefore, says Reb Shimon, you have two miyotim. Chad lahecha dehoysa l'shasa kosher, b'chad lelohoysa l'shasa kosher. One of them is memayat the case where it had a shasa kosher, and the other one where not. And therefore, the pasuk is telling us that in neither case do you have to wash in the azara. Rabbi Akiva answers to that. He said, oisa, yes, there is a miyot in the word oisa, but that means prat l'truma. What that tells us is that the concept of mariko shifa does not apply to truma. Now, it is true, if you cook truma in a pot, you're all going to have to kasher it, just because later on you're going to be cooking chulin in it. If you ever want to cook chulin in that pot and have zorin be able to eat it, you're going to have to kasher that pot, because otherwise it's absorbed truma, and then the truma is going to exude out into the next food. But the special din of mariko shifa, the details that we're going to learn later on in our perek, that you have to wash it and cleanse it on the inside and outside, and specifically with water and not other liquids, and so on and so forth, that din does not apply to truma. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva says that the Torah is telling us that you don't need to do that by truma, but you do need to do it by the chatas, but only where the chatas had shasa kosher, not when it didn't. But Reb Shimon doesn't agree with that. He goes according to his svara to Omar, where he says, in fact, kodshim kalim ain't tonin miriko shtifa. He says later on in the parak that even kodshim kalim do not require miriko shtifa. B'chol Shekin Truma. All the more so, Rav Shimon says Truma certainly wouldn't. If even Kodesh Kalim, Shlomim, or Todo, or whatever, don't require Mariko Shtifa after you cook in the pot, you do need to kasher the pot so that you can eat, so you can cook in it later and not have Noser in it, but you don't need to do the special Mariko Shtifa. Then Rav Shimon says, certainly that would be the case with Truma, which has less Kedusha than Kodesh Kalim, and therefore we don't need a miut in the pot for it, and therefore he has a miut available for the din where it didn't have Shasa Kosher. Next, the Mishnah says, here's more dinim about this business of kibbutz. The Mishnah says, "Mitas menat savra ala beged." If the blood squirted directly from the animal's neck onto the clothing, ain't a toan kibbutz, then it doesn't require kibbutz in the azara. Because you can't sprinkle it on the mizbeach. Now Tosfos points out we did already have in the previous Mishnah, we said that if the blood became tame or otherwise possible, then it's not roi lahazah. So automatically you should say, well, the same thing. If it gets on clothing, wouldn't it be the same din? But no, you would think that over here b'vasachas, that becomes possible. The moment it hits the clothing is also the moment it becomes possible, similar to Rami Muhammad's question before, and therefore you would think that maybe it's not in the same category as before we were talking about where it became possible, and only then it got on the clothing, and therefore the Mishnah needs to stress for us that it's not so, and in fact the same din applies, that it doesn't require kibbutz. Similarly, continues the Mishnah, min hakeren, if the blood splashed off of the corner of the mizbeach, so you did shtei matanas shenab, well, not in the case of chatas, not shtei matanas shenab, but whatever, you applied the blood to the corner of the mizbeach, and then from there it got on clothing, umina yisoid, or from the yisoid of the mizbeach, ain't a toan kibbutz, then it doesn't require to be washed in the azara, because as the Gemara is going to explain, once the blood was already sprinkled, then once the mitzvah has already been accomplished with the blood, then this din of kibbutz does not apply to it. Now, when we say mina yisoid, by the way, Rashi points out, it doesn't mean from the yisoid itself, whereas if even from the keren, it doesn't require, how much more so from the yisoid, which is where the mitzvah has definitely been already accomplished. It means the shirayim that's going to yet be poured on the yisoid, we talked about this earlier in the Masechta. So it means, in other words, when the blood is in the basin and going to be sprinkled on the corners, then the din of washing it in the azara will still apply. If at that point some of it gets on clothing, but if it was already sprinkled on the kronos, even though it's still in the basin and you haven't yet poured it on the and you haven't yet poured the shirayim on the yisoid, the mitzvah has already been accomplished. The shirayim is not there's only shirayim. It's only the leftovers of the mitzvah, and therefore at that point that blood will not require kibbutz. Okay, the Mishnah continues, Nishbach ala Ritzvah, if the blood spilled on the floor, v'osfa, and he collected in a candy, ein toan kibbutz, then it also doesn't require kibbutz, because again, it can't be applied to the mizbeach. Now, we made a distinction earlier in the Masechta between whether it's spilled directly from the neck onto the ground, where then you can't even collect it in a keli and sprinkle it, as opposed to if it was collected in a keli and then it landed on the ground and then you sopped it up from there, where there in fact we said that it is in fact it is kosher to sprinkle. Here in our Mishnah, the Tzon Kodshim understands that actually the Tana is giving us a chiddush and telling us, even if it went from the keli onto the floor, nevertheless, if now you collect it from the floor, then it doesn't require kibbutz. But he points out that Rashi obviously disagrees with that, and in fact other achronim also disagree with the Tzon Kodshim and learn differently. So in toan kibbutz, the rule is, the Mishnah says, blood is going to require kibbutz in the azara, el adam sheniskabel b'kliver roi la'azara, only when it was collected in a keli and suitable to be sprinkled on a mizbeach. So all the cases we've discussed so far are cases, well, not all the cases, but many of the cases we discussed so far are where it's not roi to sprinkle on a mizbeach, and therefore the din of kibbutz doesn't apply to him. The case where we said min hakeren is for a different reason, because it was already sprinkled on a mizbeach and the mitzvah has been accomplished. So that's the Gemara deals with the source for these dinim. Tanan Rabbanan, Yochol Nitzes Menat Tzava Ala Beged Yaiton Kibbutz. You would think that if it squirted directly from the neck of the animal onto the clothing, that it should require kibbutz. Nope, Tamad Laima Ashi Yizeh. The Pasuk says that will be sprinkled, from which we learn, Laya Marti Machala B'Roi La'azah, so it applies only. So it applies only where it's suitable to sprinkle. And therefore, since over here it landed directly on clothing and it's possible to sprinkle, then therefore the din doesn't apply. Because as we said, the point is, in other words, the earlier Mishnayos had talked about where it was possible before. Now we're talking about it becomes possible the moment that it hits the clothing and becomes absorbed in it, and we're still saying that that's possible as well. Shitim Kubetis points out that, before in Rami Bahama's question, at least we had the blood was actually received in a basin in a way that was kosher. Then it landed on a Begad Tomei. He was talking about the Mishnah, it landed directly on the Begad from the neck, which is why the Gemara in the earlier discussion of Rami Bahama's question did not bring our Mishnah, because it's clearly not the same case. So it would have to be Roy Laza, and if it landed directly on clothing, it's not Roy Laza. Tanya Ida, we learn in another Braisa, this is the din in the second half of our Mishnah. Yochel nitas min akeren, or min ayisoid yehetoon kibbutz, or not the second half, whatever, the second part of our Mishnah, that you would think that if it's squirted from the corner of the mizbeach, or from the yisoid, or from the blood that's ready to be poured on the yisoid, yehetoon kibbutz, then it should require kibbutz. No, tamad lema ashe yizeh, the pasuk says that will be sprinkled. Prat lezeh sheklau huzah, as opposed to these cases where it was already sprinkled, and therefore you don't need to wash it in the azar. Okay? We said in the Mishnah, Nishbach al Ritz b'chol, we said if it's spilled on the ground and you collected it, then it's not Ton Kibbutz either. So the Gemara asked, Hotu Lomali, why do we need to say that? Why do we need to say that as well? We already said that, only if it was received in a Keli. Now again, according to the Tzon Kodshim, it wouldn't be such a question, because he would say that even if it's spilled from the Keli, then it wouldn't require Kibbutz. But again, everybody else argued with him. Tosfos points out that the Gemara could also ask on the case where it's spilled on the floor, that we said that it doesn't require kibbutz. Why do we have to why do we even need to mention the point that it's spilled on the floor? We could derive that from the case where it's spilled directly from the net. Anyway. So the answer is matam kama. The answer is when the Mishnah is mentioned in the case when it was. So the question is, why does the Mishnah have to say ein ton kibbutz ela shen eskabel b'klik, that it needs kibbutz only if it was received in a keli? We see that already. The Mishnah had said if it's spilled from the neck onto the floor, then you don't need kibbutz. So we know therefore it has to be received in a keli. So again, Tosfos is asking why it doesn't mention b'chlal, why it's not asking why it has to b'chlal mention nishbach al ritzva, that it fell on the floor. We should be able to derive that from nitas min atzavra, from the case where it's squirted directly from the neck. In any case, the answer is matan tama. The answer is the Mishnah is not giving us another case. The Mishnah is giving us a reason. Matan nishbach al ritzva v'osvay ein ton kibbutz. Why is it that if it's spilled on the floor and you collected it from the floor, it does not require kibbutz, lefisha in ton kibbutz, al adam shen eskabel b'kli, v'roi la'azoya, because it requires kibbutz only when it was received in a keli and is suitable to do hazoya, and here you don't have because it's spilled on the floor directly from the neck, and it's not roi la'azoya. Okay, according to the Tzon Kodshim, the chiddush would be that even though in this case it was collected into the keli, again, nevertheless, when it was on the floor, it wasn't Roy Lazoya, and therefore you don't have to do kibbutz. Okay, we said in the Mishnah that it has to be received in a keli, the Roy Lazoya. Roy Lazoya. So the question is the Ma'oti Mahi. What does it mean when it says suitable for Hazoya? What else is that meaning to exclude it? The answer is the Ma'oti Kibbutz Pachas Mikidei Hazoya B'Klizeh or Pachas Mikidei Hazoya B'Klizeh. Suppose that the Kohen did the Kabbalah, received the blood into the basin, a little bit, a tiny bit in one keli and a tiny bit in the other, each one less than the amount that you could use for sprinkling. So now he mixed them together in one keli. Nevertheless, that Kabbalah was not a valid Kabbalah because He didn't put enough in the basin in the first place to do a proper hazal. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, of chalakta bar shol omer, kiddush, kiddush pochus mekidei hazoy b'klizeh, or pochus mekidei hazoy b'klizeh, loy kiddush. In fact, exactly that. If you were to put only a tiny, so here he mentions in connection with pora adruma water, Where again, you have in each Haley, there was not enough for Hazoya, there was not enough to dip the Azoiv and sprinkle, and he did less than that amount of water in one Haley, and less than that amount in the other Haley. And then he put them together, like Kiddush, that water does not become Kaddish, and if you put the ashes in it when they were separate, then you can't use them, you can't use them to be a Tahara person. So we see this concept, so we see, that when it so we see that when it comes to part Adrama water, that you can't combine together less than a Shio Hazah in each one. So now our Mishnah is saying in the same vein, when it comes to the blood of Korbanos, then the same thing, if you receive less in each basin than the proper amount, then if that blood gets on clothing, you don't have to wash it in the Hazara, because it's not Rui La Hazoya, because less than that amount is not Rui to be sprinkled. There was discussion about Mephoshim. Are we primarily talking about, so Rashi over here mentions that we're talking about over here specifically by Chatois HaPnimius, because since by then you have to do seven sprinklings or even more by Yom Kippur, then you certainly need to have a respectable amount of blood in the container in order to do it. By Chatas Chatzoyna, that might not apply, given that, as we learned earlier in Masechta, you only need one matana, you only need one application of blood by Chatas Chatzoyna to be Yotze, to be Yevet, and therefore maybe it's good enough even if you have a tiny amount. On the other hand, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta learns that it applies to Chatois Chatzonius as well. There still needs to be a minimum amount over there that he could dip his finger in. So we boil over Dam Mahu. So now the question is, as far as the blood, what would be the din? Now you and our Mishnah were saying that fine, if the blood was collected in separate kalim and then mixed together, then if it goes from that kalim onto the clothing, you don't have to wash it. But the chlal, is that blood kosher for sprinkling? Would we say hilchasi when it comes to the pora dermal water? It's a halacha l'moshe misinai. Or me hilchasa l'gamrin, and we can't learn from halacha l'moshe misinai to other dinim. Every halacha l'moshe misinai kind of stands on its own. Or Dilma, Hossam my timer, or maybe it's not, maybe with the part of water, it's not because Allah Moshe Sinai, maybe it's based on a pasuk. The pasuk says that you should take the Azov and dip it in the water. And that means the Azov, and Rashi points out the word is Bamayim, which means in the water, not Bimayim, which would mean in water. So that means the same water that we talked about before. So it means that when he's putting in the part of the ashes into the water, that he should take the Lokach Me'afar Sreifas Achatas from Nelson Allah Mayim Chaim O'Kelly. The same water, the same amount of water is the amount that has to be used when you're sprinkling. And from there, we learn, therefore, that the water, there has to be a minimum amount of water when you're mechanishing, enough to afterwards be able to sprinkle. So we could say that it's based on that, because there's the tovah b'mayim that you should dip in the water, meaning that the same minimum amount of water that was there before is what has to be there now in order to dip in. Hachanamik, see the tovah b'dam. The same way over here, the Torah says the expression that the Kohen should dip his finger in the blood. And again, b'dam, in the blood, so that should mean, again, that there has to be the minimum amount to begin with, and if not, then it doesn't become kaddish. Or maybe not, or maybe only by part adrama, maybe by blood. Fine, you receive the less than the amount in a keli, but fine, add more afterwards, and it'll be kosher. So the Gemara says Toshma, to Amar Reb Zrika, Amar Reb Elazar, after Dam Loy Kiddush. Reb Zrika tells us in the name of Reb Elazar that even when it comes to blood, he's not Mekadosh. So therefore, so our Mishnah is saying exactly that, therefore that if he received less than the proper amount of blood in a keli, and less than the proper amount in another keli, and then combine them together, then it's not Kiddush, you can't sprinkle it on the Mizbeach, and therefore Kibbutz won't apply, because Kibbutz applies only, as we've been talking about all this time, only to blood that is suitable to sprinkle on the Mizbeach. Okay, the Gemara says Omar Rava Tanya. In fact, we learn like that in a Braisa. What Reb Zrika is telling us in the name of Reb Elazar, we actually learn a Braisa to that effect. Because the Braisa says the Toval, that when it says he should dip his finger in, that means going to sapping. It can't be that he's wiping the blood off the side or the bottom of the keli with his finger. It has to be that he can dip his finger in and blood will come on it. Badum, and when it says badum in the blood, means adshi hey badum. Shiur tefillah meikra means the blood has to have. There has to be enough blood to begin with to be able to dip its finger into. It means min habdum from the blood, means min habdum shabainian from the blood that's mentioned in this context, which the Gemara is going to explain in a second what that means. So. Uh, So therefore, so we see that this braisa is clearly saying that it means that you have to have a minimum amount of blood in the keli, and if not, then it's no good. So the Gemara points out the itzuch michta badam. Now the fact is, the Torah does have to write the words badam and the toval. It does need to say badam. The ikos rachmana. Because of Rahman of a Toval, if the Torah had said only the Toval that he should dip, have Amina Afapi Deleka Shir Tvila Me'ikra, then it would mean maybe even if he didn't, when he received the blood, there wasn't enough blood in the basin to do a Tvila, as long as afterwards he poured in more from a different Kali, maybe it would be good. Kosher Rahman of Badam, therefore the Torah says in the blood, meaning again the blood that has already been received in the Kali. So from when it's received, there has to be that minimum amount. The E Kosher Rahman of Badam, but if he only said Badam, have Amin after the Masate, then he wouldn't know. You would think even if he just wipes the blood off the side with his finger is also good enough. Kosher Rahman of Vitobal, therefore instead the Torah says that, Vitobal, implying that he actually has to dip his finger in and not just scrape it off the side. So you need both drushes. Now, when the Braisa had said, Min Adom Shabi Inyan, the Braisa had said that when it says, Min Adom, means from the blood mentioned in this context, well, as opposed to what? The answer is, Omar Rabba, Lamu'uti Shirayim Shabi Esta. It comes to exclude the leftover blood on the Koyim's finger. He cannot use that again for the next Hazar. Messiah of Rabbi Elazar, which supports what Rabbi Elazar says. Rabbi Elazar, Shirayim Shabbat Etzvah Psulim. Rabbi Elazar, in fact, says exactly that, that the Shirayim that are on the finger are possible to sprinkle afterwards. However, the Gemara says, Omele Rovin Baram Adam Aram, Amri Tamidcha, Omer of Amram. However, your Tamidim have said that Rabbi Amram have said, Tanena, we learn in a Braisa that seems to say not like that. The Braisa says, Hoya Maze, if the Kohen was sprinkling with his finger, with the Chatoris HaPnimius, which requires sprinkling, the Nitza Hazami Yadai, and one of the applications, one of the squirts of blood that he did goes from his finger onto the Beged, so it depends. Abshalei Hiza, if he did it before he sprinkled, Tohen Kibbutz, then that clothing will have to be washed in the Azara. Misha Hiza, but if it happened after he sprinkled, Ein Tohen Kibbutz, then it doesn't require Kibbutz. So my lab, sort of Amram points out, shouldn't we infer from the Braisa Hochikama that the Braisa means actually Goma Milahazas? It means that if it happened before he finished doing all the Hazars, Tohen Kibbutz, then it still requires Kibbutz. So in other words, what would happen is, so he has to do, let's say, for example, with the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, he has to do Achas Lamayla V'Sheva Lamata. So the Amram says the Braisa seems to be implying that if, for example, let's say he had done five or six of them, and then on the sixth or seventh one, let's say the blood flies off his finger and lands on clothing, it will require kibbutz. But only if he finished, only when he finished everything, and then it lands on clothing, ain't tone kibbutz, and only when he's finished all the hazois, then we would say that if it lands on clothing, it doesn't need to be washed in the Azara. Now the point is, in other words, so that seems to imply, in other words, that the blood that's on his finger is fine to do the next Hazar. Because if it's possible, if each time he dips his finger in and does the first Hazar, and now you're going to say the remaining blood on his finger is possible for the next Hazar, then it shouldn't require kibbutz if now at that point it accidentally gets on clothing. And yet, the Braisa seems to be implying that it does. Only at the end, once he's done all the Hazois, then the remaining blood, there's no more Hazois to do, therefore that blood doesn't require kibbutz. So it would come out very clearly that the blood remaining on the finger is in fact kosher for the next Hazar, and therefore, when he's still in the middle of the Hazois, and therefore that's why it requires kibbutz. How can we even bring from Rabbeinu Peretz that wonders, how can we even think that? We know for a fact, Al Kol Hazar Tvila, every sprinkling requires its own dipping of blood of his finger, because the Shirayim are possible. But at this point, the Gemara is thinking that maybe it's just a Gzeres HaKosu. The Pasuk says, that he should take the blood. He's a Sheva Pomim. So maybe it means, in other words, that everything that he takes is, that the blood that he takes is kosher. So we would say the fact that you need to toivel the finger before every hazah is a gzeiras hakosim because it says the hezah shev upon him, that he has to do with a lockup for each one, but maybe nevertheless the blood would still be subject to kibbutz, and only at the end that not. So you see then, therefore, that the shirayim that are on the finger are not necessarily possible. So the answer is loy. No, that's not what the b'raisa means. Hachakama, actually, yotza hazor miyodei. What it means is, if the blood got on the clothing before it left his finger, so he dipped his finger in, and while it was still on his finger, ready to do the hazor, then that blood dripped on clothing, toh and kibbutz, then that requires kibbutz. Mishin yotza hazor miyodei. But once that blood left his finger, then what's left on his finger is the shirayim, ain tone kibbutz, then it doesn't require kibbutz because the shirayim on his finger are in fact possible to do the hazar with. So therefore, so the braisa is no contradiction to what we just said, that shirayim should be etzba psalim. Well, the Gemara continues. Eis v'abaya. So Abaya says, I have a contradiction. We learn in Mishnayis Torah, talking about when the Kohen is doing the Parah Adumah. So again, part of the process is that he actually shechts the Parah Adumah. He takes the blood, he dips his finger in the blood, and sprinkles it seven times in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash. He's standing on Har HaZeis in east of Yerushalayim. He faces towards the Beis HaMikdash and does seven sprinklings in that of the blood in that direction. Now, the Mishnah says, Gomer Milahazes, when he finishes doing the seven hazois, Mekaneach Yodei B'Gufa Shel Parah. He wipes his hand on the body of the parah. The reason being, because the whole parah has to be burnt, including all the blood, so therefore, whatever blood he sprinkled, the sprinkle, that's gone, but whatever is left on his hand, he needs to wipe off onto the body of the cow in order that it will be burnt together with it. Now, that implies, says Abaye, Gomer Ein Loi Gomer Loi, implying that only when he finishes all seven sprinklings does he wipe his hands on the parah, but not before that. Now, why not? Presumably because the leftover blood on his finger is kosher for the next hazah. So and only at the end does he have to wipe his hand. Omalei, but Rava says, no, that's not what it means. Gomer, it means that when he finishes all of the hazahs, Mekaneach Yodei B'Gufah Shel Parah, then he needs to wipe his hand on the body of the parah. But loy gomar, but before he finished all the hazois, mekaneach etz boy. Then he wipes only his finger. Because again, you have the shirayim of the blood that are on his finger or apostle, and therefore between each hazar and the next, he has to wipe his finger. Well, the question is, vishlema mekaneach yodei b'gufa shel parah, so that he has to wipe his hand on the body of the parah. Sure, we understand why. Shenema, the start-up has a parah la'inam. The pasuk says he should burn the parah in his presence. And that means the blood also needs to be burnt together with the parah. So therefore we understand that he'll wipe it on the parah and that way it'll be in the fire. Ella, it's boy, b'mayim mekaneach. But what is he supposed to wipe his finger on? You're going to tell me that he should wipe it on the parah. The problem is that then hairs from the parah are going to stick to his finger, and then it's going to be a chatzitza. So actually, Tosfos points out that in Menachos, which we'll learn in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, Rashi gives a different explanation. Rashi learns that he would actually have to go down, he would actually have to every time go up the mountain in order to be higher up and be able to see the Heichel, and then go down to where the Parah Adumah is being shechted and will be burnt, and he has to go up and down in between, and it would be a hassle for him to have to go up and down and dip and then wipe his finger between every application. Tosfos says that's not so. The fact is that everything takes place in the same area. You have an area designated for the Parah Adumah later on in the Masechta. We're going to talk about it a little bit. They call it Gita, like the wine press, the place of a hole in the ground which is designated for this purpose. And the Kohen shecht, and they shecht it, and they have it, and they burn it, and he does the sprinklings all over there. There's no going up and down the mountains. So rather, Rashi over here is pointing out, and Tosfos endorses this explanation, we mean that his hand is going to get dirty with hairs on it, and it's going to be a chatzitz. So he can't be wiping his finger on the body of the parah. So what does he wipe it on? Amar Abaya, this is fast mizrak. The answer is Abaya says he wipes it on the edge of a mizrak, on the edge of the basin in which the blood was received. And we know that in other places the Kohen does that. As we find in Sefer Ezra, that the basins that were used for the blood in the Beis Mikdash are called Kfore Zohav. The word Kfore comes from a word for wiping. Rashi refers to the example in the Gemara about the, in the Sugya about the Churban in Gittin, where you have the expression that Niran Kaser is ready to go destroy the Beis Mikdash. But then he hears a positive that he realizes that I'm going to destroy Hashem's house, and then Hashem is going to wipe his hands on me. In other words, Hashem is going to use me for his purposes and then take revenge on me, and I don't want that. He runs off and becomes a ger. So we see that the v'chapure yodir, v'kofar yodir, needs to wipe his hands. So the same way over here, the Mizrakim are called kfore zohav because the Kohen would wipe his finger on them between one hazah and the next. There is quite an interesting discussion in this connection, that the chlal is the blood of the parah adruma even received using a basin, or is it not? The Sifri actually says that the mitzvah is that the blood of the parah adruma is supposed to be received in the hand of the kohen and no keli. So, and the Rambam even goes so far as to say that if it was received in a keli, it'll be posel. So therefore, so now the question would be, according to the Rambam, what Mizrak is there? There's no Mizrak over here, because according to him, there's no Mizrak. The blood is received dafka in the Kohen's hand. And in fact, the Rambam does say that after every Hazar, he wipes his finger on the body of the Parah, which would be not like our Gemara over here. And then different Nosa Kalim on the Rambam and different Mephoshim talk about the Raivan, in particular disagrees with the Rambam and says that fine, it should be received by hand, like it says in Sifri, but there's no source to say that it should be possible if he did in a Kali. So therefore, our Gemara would say that there's a Mizrak over there, and therefore that would be, and in fact, the Raivan says that would be the purpose. You want to make sure all the blood is collected. If he's going to collect all of it in his hand, he's really realistically, some of it is going to spill. Therefore, better he should use a Mizrak, and that way, afterwards, he can pour that back into the area where the Parah Adruma is going to be burned, and make sure that all of it is, is burned. So it comes out, according to the Rambam, in fact, it's not like our Gemara, and the Kohen does, in fact, wipe his hand on his finger on the Parah Adruma between every application of blood. Whereas according to, and that would fit with the Rambam's Shitta, that if the blood is collected in a Mizrak, it's completely possible, whereas the Raivan disagrees and says it's kosher if it's collected in a Mizrak, and in fact it should be as much as possible collected in a Mizrak, so it doesn't spill on the ground, and therefore there is a Mizrak available, and therefore, as Abaye is saying over here, the Kohen can wipe his hand on the edge of it. Okay, but the bottom line is, in other words, that the shirayim on the finger are in fact possible for hazah, and therefore he does need to do that every time. He needs to wipe his finger on something, otherwise the remaining blood is possible, and therefore that answers what we were saying before. If the blood that's left on his finger now gets on clothing, then in fact that clothing does not have to be washed in the hazara, because that blood is anyway possible for swindling.